This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, halfway through the program, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com, from TSN 690 in Montreal, we're pleased to welcome to the program Mark Dumont. Mark, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Never a dull moment in Montreal, eh?
Never a dull moment is right. Is there a movement afoot to maybe ban Marc Bergevin from making any one-for-one player trades?
You know, if you ask the fans, I'm sure you'll get that reaction. I think... the main issue here, when you look at those trades, it's not necessarily that the Canadiens got hosed on any of them, but I don't think you can say they won any of them. And to add to that, the fact that they traded Sergachev is fine. The fact that they traded Subban, that's fine. Galchenyuk, Heller, that's okay. You're allowed to do that. But the fact that they didn't fulfill any of the pressing roster needs, I think that's really the most damning situation for Bergevin, is that he's trading away his best assets, and he's not filling any needs. The Canadiens have needed the number one center since I've been born, so it's, you know, it's going on over 30 years now, and I think that's what fans are looking at here. It's not just that the trades are okay in a vacuum, it's that overall it seems to lack vision.
Mark, you know, we were talking about the trade earlier in the program, and I sort of equated it to the trade the Edmonton Oilers made, where they deemed that they had to get rid of Taylor Hall. And so they traded him to New Jersey for Adam Larson. And the thinking being, yeah, okay, maybe the Habs needed to trade away Alex Galchenyuk. Maybe his time in Montreal had run its course. But is the return that they got good enough for what Galchenyuk brings to the table?
Well, I mean, I'd have to say, I don't think they're on the same wavelength, in the sense that, obviously, Taylor Hall was one of the best forwards in the NHL, you know, top five winger. And Adam Larson, he's a second pairing guy that's pretty good. But I get what you're saying, in the sense that you're devaluating an asset, and that seems to be a recurring theme with the Canadiens, is that you grind a guy into the ground, and then you turn around and try to get your best value for him. So to me, I didn't think they needed to trade Galchenyuk. But you're correct in saying that the Canadiens had decided that. It's been 2 years that this guy's on the trade market. So I think he probably did do his due diligence, probably did get max value, but there's always the other option of keeping your very good young player that can score goals on a team that struggles to score goals. So in terms of the value he got back, I think it's actually fairly decent, as good as you can probably get given how long he's been on the market. But I probably wouldn't have made that trade, just because the Canadiens can't score goals, and Galchenyuk's one of the few guys that does. Max Domi has 10 even strength goals in the last 2 years. A few of those are empty netters. So it goes to show that right now they're not addressing their biggest issues, which is, again, center, left defenseman, top pairing, and goal scoring. They seem to be getting away from that, and that is a concern for the Canadiens.
So, Mark, are the Canadiens and Claude Julien considering using Max Domi as a center, and where does this leave Max Pacioretty? Is the expectation that Pacioretty is still on the trade block?
Well, that's the really most interesting aspect of this, is what do you do with Pacioretty now? Because without Galchenyuk and Pacioretty, who scores goals for the Canadiens? Obviously, Gallagher had a great year last year. He cracked 30 goals, and he's one of their only legitimate top-line guys. But if you get rid of Galchenyuk and Pacioretty in the same offseason, you're getting rid of about a third of your goals scored. So to me, that is the biggest problem here. Now, the Canadiens have $22 million in cap space, about 19 now that they've signed Domi. So they can still go out, maybe get a John Tavares, maybe get a John Carlson, and really address some of those main issues. But in the long run, it does seem like the Canadiens are intent on trading a lot of their core players, and I'm not seeing basically a plan here. It seems almost reactionary. So whatever happens with Max Pacioretty, Max Bergevin has to nail it. He has to get the maximum return available. And if not, keep him. He's one of the best goal scorers in franchise history. So I know that he's tried to move the Pacioretty in the past, and he's been upset with his play. But at one point, you know, we can go down these numbers as much as we want. You need to score goals in the NHL, and that's what the Canadiens lack. So if you move Pacioretty and you don't get a goal score back, this team will be one of the worst again in the NHL next season.
Well, Mark, with all the negativity, there is a reason for optimism. The draft is upcoming. The Canadiens have the third overall pick. They also have four second-round picks. So who do you see them taking in the first round, and do you see them keeping all four of those second-round picks?
Well, it's interesting here because I think a guy like Zadina can step in and maybe not mimic Galchenyuk's production, but in a couple of years he might be able to get there. So that might be a really good replacement for moving Alex Galchenyuk. The other options are there are some pretty good defensemen available. You're looking at Dobson, Hughes, Bouchard. There's a few of them there. So the Canadiens are really high on a guy like Quinn Hughes. They see him as a very mobile skater that can jump into the roster in the next couple of years. So they're looking at players that can help fairly soon. We're not looking at the big project players. They want to get guys that can help in the next couple of years. There's also the idea that they might draft a guy like Brady Tkachuk. But now that you've acquired Max Domi, you have a guy like Andrew Shaw in your lineup, there's really no need for a Brady Tkachuk to be in there. So hopefully the idea here is they go with skill, right? And in terms of second-round players, again, the Canadiens really need to fill their cupboard with prospects. You look at a team like the Winnipeg Jets, and how many of their best players are homegrown? The vast majority, right? There's been some trades here and there, but their overall talent, and you know, the fans got on Cheveldayoff's case last year, and for good reason, but it ended up turning out fairly well for that team. So maybe the Canadiens can look to that and say, hey, instead of trading these potential players for, you know, a known commodity that doesn't have the same ceiling, maybe we should invest in our future a little bit, because Max Pacioretty preaches building through the draft, but as we've all seen, that's not how we operate things. He's been getting rid of his first-round picks left, right, and center. So for now, hopefully the Canadiens get a huge infusion of talent in terms of their draft picks. And if I'm them, I'm not trading them for a guy that can play on my third line now. You really need to restock those cupboards, because you can't be one of the worst teams in the NHL and have one of the worst prospect groups. That just won't fly. So hopefully Trevor Timmins goes to the podium 10 or 11 times in the next couple of weeks, and the Canadiens will go from having one of the worst prospect pools to one of the better ones.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Our guest is Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com in Montreal and of our sister station, TSN 690. Mark, you mentioned that, you know, entering last season, Kevin Cheveldayoff had some pressure on him, or he was feeling the heat for the Jets' lack of performance. This is year seven now of Marc Bergevin as general manager of the Canadiens. Is his leash getting shorter, and has he maybe lost the benefit of the doubt with a lot of the Montreal Canadiens fan base?
Well, I think that's the key there, is whether you ask the fans or the owner. The fans want him out. There's always, you know, the group of hardcore fans that really, you know, love everything the team does, and that's fine, but they're a vocal majority in Montreal, a minority in Montreal right now. They'll make some noise, but the vast majority of the fans are very frustrated. We're going on 25 years without a Stanley Cup. We're going on two out of the last 3 years they've missed making the playoffs. They've traded all the fan favorites, you know, going from Subban down to Galchenyuk. These are guys that the fans got excited by. They brought good entertainment value. And these are guys that people really, they endeared themselves to the fans. So, you know, they became a little bit more in terms of fan value than just what they bring to the ice. These are guys that people just love. So I think the fans are out of patience, but that doesn't matter. The owner is absolutely on his side. Jeff Molson is confident in Marc Bergevin. And I didn't have the sense last year that he'd be at risk, and I don't get the sense this year that he's at risk. Now, if the Canadiens miss three out of the last four, if we're talking at the end of the year and the Canadiens are one of the worst teams in the league, we'll have to, you know, reevaluate that. But for the time being, Jeff Molson has full confidence in his general manager. Whether that's a good idea or not remains to be seen. So far, not looking great.
Mark, I wanted to ask you about Logan Shaw. I thought you had a really interesting article up on theathletic.com about Logan Shaw. He's a RFA right now, 25 years old, former draft pick of the Florida Panthers. He was actually a really productive player for the Habs after he was acquired from the Anaheim Ducks. And your argument was that Logan Shaw, as an affordable third or fourth line guy, is actually a player that has some untapped potential and could be more than just a depth forward for the Habs.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, you know, you look at the numbers with the Canadiens last year, and it was such an awful team. Like, no one did well. And I find this funny when we discuss Max Domi. People are saying, hey, he played for a bad team. Well, guess what? The Canadiens were worse last year. So it's really hard to judge. And if you look at Logan Shaw's possession numbers, they're not great. But he was playing on a fourth line with guys like Byron Fraze and Jacob De La Rose, which I'm sure some of your listeners are looking up on HockeyDB right now. But, you know, he wasn't playing with very good players. But here's the thing. He creates chances. He creates individual scoring chances. He creates high danger chances. So to me, if you get a 25-year-old player as your 13th forward, that's the way I look at the NHL should be going nowadays. Having a 13th player that's a veteran, I feel, is a waste of a roster spot. Obviously, it depends on the guy. But to me, if you have a guy that's relatively young, that can skate and create chances, I think that's who you want as your one of your alternates, as opposed to, you know, putting in a guy that's good in the room, can't skate too well, and is 35 years old. I'd go with the former approach. And I feel like the NHL is really moving towards that youth movement, and it goes all throughout the ranks, from the top line down to your 13th forward. And if they let Logan Shaw go, that's fine. If they sign him, there's absolutely no issue with that. He does have some potential. But the key here is very little potential.
You know, Mark, sometimes when the NHL franchise isn't performing very well, you can look to the AHL in the future and you think to yourself, okay, things are good. The problem with Montreal is Laval Rocket were the worst team in the AHL last season. They've got a new coach in Joel Bouchard. What kind of opportunity do you think it's going to be for him to bring his experience from the NHL into that to that team, and what can he do to help them get back into a playoff position and help the Montreal Canadiens?
Well, I think the first thing is you have to establish a legitimate defensive system. Right now, the Canadiens, their defensive system is based on video footage of rodeo clowns. So they just run around, you know, trying to get the... Or have you ever watched Timbits hockey between periods?
Yeah.
You know how all the players follow the puck? That's what happens in Laval. And it was the same issue in Montreal, right? So the Laval Rocket had the worst penalty kill in the league. They allowed the most goals, the most penalty kill goals. And their offense eventually petered out. There's a lot of reasons behind it. One of the main ones is a ton of injuries at the NHL level. But regardless of the talent level, and that is another issue, they need more talent at the AHL, and this draft will provide that. They didn't have anyone that was a top-notch strategy, someone that can put in a high-end strategy that can actually develop with the players their personal skills, their developmental skills, and that's what the new coach of the Laval Rocket really specializes in. He's been known to teach technical abilities, whether it's at the Hockey Canada level or in the Quebec Junior Major Hockey League. That's really his forte. So he's got a big task ahead of him. He's got to get rid of that losing culture, because the Laval Rocket and the Hamilton Bulldogs and the St. John IceCats before them, they're all losers, not in the personal sense, just in the team sense. You know, they won one playoff game in the last 6 years. So one of the issues with the Canadiens is you're raising all your prospects in a losing culture. So he's going to have to change that. And I think he'll do better than Sylvain Lapierre. But regardless of how good the coach is, he needs talent. Right now, Montreal's AHL team is void of talent. So we'll see how that goes. But, you can only do so much with what you're given.
Last question for you, Mark. Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com and TSN 690, our guest. It's going to be a second season in Montreal. He was the off-season acquisition last summer. That's Jonathan Drouin coming from Tampa for Mikhail Sergachev. What are reasonable expectations for Drouin in his second season now in Montreal?
I guess the golden question here is he going to be put back at center, mm-hmm. right? I think he will. I think the Canadiens are all in on that. In the same length that they said that Galchenyuk would never be a center, they're more or less committed to getting Drouin in that position. So it's tough. It's tough to learn to play center at that age. He played a little bit in minor leagues in the junior major league with Halifax, but it was never his strong point. So I unfortunately for Habs fans listening, I see another tough year for DeHoin coming up, just because he has to develop his defensive skills at defender position, which is, you know, a whole other bag of worms there, if you want to use a terrible idiom. So to me, I see it as another learning year. I don't predict he'll crack 50 points. He might be a little bit better in terms of scoring goals, but I think you'll see a slight boost in terms of his overall offensive numbers. And hopefully for the Canadiens, he'll take a huge leap in his development in terms of playing defensive hockey. So I just don't expect Jonathan DeHoin to be among the top 10, 50, or maybe even 100 scorers in the NHL next season.
Mark Dumont covers the Montreal Canadiens for TheAthletic.com and our sister station, TSN 690 in Montreal. Mark, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day.
Likewise, Mark, you too. When we come back, what are we doing when we come back? We're going to discuss our UFAs of the week. There are a couple players with the Vegas Golden Knights, James Neal and David Perron. They're up on as our UFAs of the week. Up next, you're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Led back ahead for the carry on by Eakin, and he flies one that is ladled down to the goal stick of Holtby, and then centered in front. Oh, and trying to make a play to Tart, and a try by Perron would not go. And then it is Smith-Pelly trying to clear once, and it failed. Eakin gave it across. Miller with a shot, guided on goal. The battling, and then Thomas Tatar is able to redirect. The great play from Colin Miller.
Perron holding on, moved inside, power move, scores! James Neal at the sign of the goal at 7.
As he hits unrestricted free agency on July 1st, we'll know soon enough. We'll discuss that this segment. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Do you love Bernstein's Deli? I know you love Bernstein's Deli, but you don't want to schlep all the way there. Sometimes it's a little inconvenient. You got a lot going on in the world.
I love Bernstein's Deli.
Shop on their online store at bernsteinsdeli.com/shop, and they'll do the work for you. You can just order online. You can get it delivered. A lot of good stuff happening online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Skip the deli.
Skip the deli. Shop online. There you are. Bernsteinsdeli.com is a good place to go.
That should be their tagline.
Skip the deli?
Yeah.
No, that would mean...
They might get a phone call from Skip the Dishes.
Also, that would mean to not go to their deli.
No, but you order online instead.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to...
He's tying it in.
I get it.
I don't mean like skip the deli.
I don't really get it. No, okay. I just don't even listen to him, to be perfectly
honest. You want some more of my CDs
here? I want more of your CDs. The focus on what you're good at right now, which is your CDs.
And again, if you haven't been listening to the show, hopefully you have been listening to the show since 9 a.m., but there's about 20 boxes of CDs outside of the studio here, so I've been...
Which Ez will be giving away after the show on Pembina.
He's definitely selling them out of the back of his trunk later on tonight.
Okay, the first one I got here, I don't remember this group, Mystery Machine?
Never heard of
it. Not cutting it for me, I'm afraid.
Name of the album was Head First Into Everything.
Well, they're energetic, I guess.
Okay, I got Sandbox here, A Murder in the Glee Club.
I don't know what any
of that
means.
I don't
means.
Remember Sandbox either. Another Sandbox album. Okay, I got some good ones here. Savage Garden.
That's a good one.
The Animal Song. There's a lot of singles here. Raphael Sadiq.
Who?
Faithful. Here's a good one.
Didn't he just win the French Open?
S Club 7. Remember S Club 7?
Club. There ain't no party like an S Club party.
Drew, you for sure watched S Club 7 after school.
No question about it.
And then last but not least, Linda Ronstadt.
Ooh.
The Waiting.
Played a song from Drew's youth.
Very good-looking woman, Linda Ronstadt.
I was going to say, is there any Air Supply in the box? We're all out of love. No? You guys don't know Air Supply?
Oh, I know the name.
That's right in your prime time there, Dave.
I don't think I've ever been as creeped out as I am right now.
And this is your segment.
Let's talk about James Neal and David Perron. They're both unrestricted free agents as of July 1st.
Maybe after today's show, CDs are going to start coming back. You'll see people walking around with their Sony Discman with shockwave protection.
I'll tell you what might not be coming back after today's show is this show next week.
No, we got a big show next week.
Draft show, 10 a.m. next Saturday until the end of the NHL draft. So again, make a note, not a 9 a.m. start, a 10 a.m. start.
Tons of Jets coverage.
And we're going till 2.
Until 2 or until the draft ends, if it goes longer than that, you know.
No, Rory says he's shutting us off at 2 o'clock.
It's actually Chris Curry next week, anyways.
Sorry, Chris Curry.
But draft coverage, day two of the
Rory's
NHL draft.
Rory's had enough of us.
Day two of the NHL draft, next Saturday, coverage here on TSN 1290. And then on Friday night, Hustler and Rick with day one coverage of the first round of the NHL draft, which might have a lot of trades as the scuttlebutt on the street right now. 2 years, $7.5 million. That's the contract that David Perron is coming off. He had a pretty good year for the Vegas Golden Knights. 66 points, just under a point a game. Certainly 16 goals, 50 assists. So racking up the assist was David Perron. And then James Neal, he's coming off of a six-year, $30 million contract that he signed as a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yep.
Then, of course, we know he went to Nashville, and then he went to Vegas in the expansion draft. He had 25 goals last year, 44 points. So more points for Perron, more goals for Neal. How do you see them striking rich? Do you see them striking rich in free agency? And what of David Perron's only one goal and being a healthy scratch during the Golden Knights' run to the Stanley Cup final?
Well, James Neal is going to get paid more than David Perron, significantly more. And David Perron is older than James Neal, I believe. No, he's not actually. He's the same age. I was going to say 1 year older, but they're actually both 30 years old. Just checked Hockey DB. But James Neal is a guy that we know he scored 30 goals before, as recently as 3 years ago with the Nashville Predators. He's actually scored 40 goals back when he was a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins. You mentioned, Drew, he signed that six-year deal with the Penguins. But, you know, 25 goals this year. He was really good in the playoffs for the Golden Knights, maybe not so much in the Stanley Cup final, but certainly in the Western Conference final and against the LA Kings and earlier against the San Jose Sharks. He was a good player for the Vegas Golden Knights. So James Neal is a guy who I could see making anywhere from $5 to $6 million a year. He's a power winger. I mean, this guy's going to get a 3-4-5 year deal. Wouldn't shock me if he gets a 5 year deal from a team, Drew. And I was kind of thinking about, you know, what teams could he go to? What about going back to the Dallas Stars?
Certainly a team that's in need of secondary scoring. They've been linked in with a guy like Ilya Kovalchuk.
Right.
Familiarity.
Well, John Tavares is another guy who his name has come up to be their second line center, because obviously Jason Spezza, last year of his contract, he's most likely going to be the third line center.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, James Neal, I could see getting a 3-4-5 year deal, making $5 to $6 million a year. As far as David Perron goes, I don't know if he necessarily gets that many years and that much money. I mean, I could see a team signing him to a 3 year deal, 4 year deal, making, I don't know, $3 million to $4 million a year. I think there are going to be teams after Perron, but I think there are going to be more teams, Dave, after James Neal. Another team that we just mentioned he could go back to, what about going back to the Pittsburgh Penguins? Well, I mean, I think there are a lot of contending teams around the NHL that are going to be interested in Neal, because they know he's going to give them 25 to 30 goals, 55 to 60 points. He's a guy that has that physical element to his game. So I wouldn't be surprised if there are going to be half a dozen teams hard after James Neal. David Perron, I don't know if there's as much of a market. I'm not saying that he won't sign a contract, because I do think he will sign a contract, but I just think Neal is going to be a more sought-after player.
Dave Perron, specifically about him, do you think the fact he only got that one goal in the playoffs, that he was at times a healthy scratch in the playoffs, do you think that's going to cost him money? Frank Saravelli wrote about this earlier in the week on TSN.ca, saying that Perron's playoff performance is likely going to cost him a fair bit of chunk of change, given that the Golden Knights deemed that they were better off with him out of the lineup than in the lineup on certain nights.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt, because the fact is that coaching staffs will often evaluate players based on their playoff performance as opposed to what they do in the regular season. The regular season is important, of course, to get you to the dance, but the reality is that what you're able to do when the game takes it to that next level is what's important really to most teams. And so I think there's no question in my mind that that's going to cost David Perron, because, you know, when you're used the way he was by Vegas, I mean, it's clearly a sign that the team didn't have a tremendous amount of faith in him. And to me, that's going to cost them some money.
When we come back, Adam Kimmelman of NHL.com joins us. He's the deputy managing editor of NHL.com. We'll talk about the week that was in the NHL. We'll lead ahead to next week's NHL draft. Touch on the Philadelphia Flyers, a team Adam is very familiar with. It's hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's coming up next on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He's the deputy managing editor of NHL.com. He's a good friend of the program. His name is Adam Kimmelman, and we welcome him to the show. Adam, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys. How are things on your end?
Very well. How about with yourself?
Very good.
That's good. Glad to hear it. Sort of into the heart of the silly season now in the NHL, Adam. Less than a week before the first round of the NHL draft in Dallas. Rounds 2 through 7, of course, next Saturday. Are you expecting, I mean, sort of got started yesterday, last night, with the Max Domi, Alex Galchenyuk trade. Are you expecting maybe a bit of a hectic week in the NHL, the awards this week in Vegas as well? Is this going to be sort of a entertaining hot stove week? Would you expect that right now?
Well, I think anytime you get 31 GMs all in one place, you know, be it for awards and then heading into draft, I think there's always the possibility of something interesting happening. And we've all heard the rumors of, you know, players either closing on free agency or teams looking to get better in the immediacy rather than waiting to, you know, draft and develop. So absolutely, it could be very interesting here, you know, starting as soon as Monday or Tuesday, teams looking to get a little more active and kind of, you know, start setting themselves up for next season. Like you said, we saw it last night with the Max Domi for Alex Galchenyuk trade, and, you know, there's always the possibility of more stuff like that happening.
Adam, we all know that Rasmus Dahlin, he's going to be selected first overall by the Buffalo Sabres. We expect the Carolina Hurricanes to take Andrei Svechnikov second overall. We wanted to ask you about that second tier of defensemen. So you're talking about Quinn Hughes, you're talking about Evan Bouchard, Noah Dobson. Which one of those three defensemen do you think will be selected first?
Well, I think it's really going to come down to personal preference, you know, what little bit separates. I think it's going to be either Bouchard or Dobson will be the first defenseman off the board after Dahlin. What order are they going? You know, there's very, very fine differences in their play. You know, both guys similar size, both right shot defensemen, both outstanding two-way players, good games offensively, good games defensively. I believe Dobson could go a little bit earlier, only because maybe a little bit more recency bias, because you got to see him all the way through the Quebec League playoffs, all the way into the Memorial Cup, and he was as good at game 91, game 90, as he was, you know, middle of the season game in Val d'Or. So I think maybe that might be just enough in the minds of some teams to say Dobson's our guy versus Bouchard. But there are just as many teams that believe Evan Bouchard could step out of the London Knights lineup and right into the NHL in October. So, you know, there's very, very fine differences between those two guys. And then you add in Quinn Hughes from University of Michigan, Adam Boqvist from Brynäs in Sweden, two maybe smaller stature guys, but dynamic offensive players, great skaters. You know, again, not a lot that separates those two guys or all four of them.
Adam, the Flyers have the 14th pick and the 19th pick this upcoming draft. GM Ron Hextall committed to making those selections, you know, building the team through the draft. Do you anticipate that he's going to keep those two picks? And if so, what kind of players do you anticipate him selecting?
Well, I think we met with Hextall yesterday, and he said, you know, they're looking to add some goal scoring and they're looking to add some defensemen, preferably a right shot defenseman. However, he wouldn't go far off his list just to find a guy just because he shoots right-handed. So I think they go sort of one of each. You know, a lot of their great young defenseman prospects that they've built up over the last few years, you know, they're either in the NHL already, when you look at Travis Sanheim and Robert Haig and Ivan Provorov, or they're, you know, right on the cusp of competing for a job when you look at guys like Sam Marin and Philippe Myers. So they need to kind of backfill behind those guys and start building, you know, rebuilding that depth and defenseman prospects for 4 and 5 years down the line. So I think when you look at that number 19 pick, I think that's where they start to look at defensemen. And the options there, you know, there's a lot of them. You look at Keandre Miller from the U.S. national team program, possibly Matias Samuelson, who the Flyers know well because his father, Shel Samuelson, works in player development for the Flyers. Two kids from the Western League who could be available in those spots, Kalen Addison from Lethbridge, Alexander Alexiev from Red Deer. I think that's where they look at 19. At 14, I would suspect, and I had this in my mock draft that we had on NHL.com last week, I think Joel Farabee is a really good option for them. Not a particularly big bruising forward, but a real legit goal scorer, played on the U.S. national team program, top line with Jack Hughes and Oliver Wahlstrom. I think if they're looking for some real pure goal scoring at that spot, I think Farabee might be the best option for them.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Adam Kimmelman. Adam is the deputy managing editor of NHL.com. Adam, if you're the Montreal Canadiens, you hold the third overall pick in this 2018 draft, and there's been a lot of talk in Montreal about what to do with that pick. Do you take the winger in Philip Zadina, or do you take the player that, you know, you have a need for a centerman in Jesperi Kotkaniemi? You know, which way would you go? Would you go, when you're the Canadiens and you have so many holes in your lineup, do you take the player you more desperately need in the centerman, or do you take arguably the more talented player in Zadina, who's a winger?
I think you look at the Canadiens lineup, and I'm going to give you a third option. I think Brady Tkachuk in that spot,
I like it,
would really be an ideal selection, because the way Brady plays, he could make your centers 3 or 4 inches taller and 10 or 20 pounds heavier, just because Brady's going to clear space for them and give them so much time and space to operate that it's not going to be, you know, where they're going to have to worry about being outmatched physically. Brady Tkachuk, you know, is big, strong, and really, really skilled, and he is always around the net. So I think more so, Zadina might be more offensively skilled, but I think what you get in Tkachuk is a player who's going to be big and strong. He's going to be near the net. Great hands. He's really talented. He can create his own shot and he can distribute. But if things aren't going his way offensively, he's really good at playing in the defensive zone, playing, you know, that hard forechecking, hard backchecking style. If he doesn't have the puck, he's very good at getting it back. So I think, to me, and I had this in my mock draft, I think Tkachuk is the ideal player in that spot for Montreal, assuming they don't trade the pick.
Adam, last week we had TSN Director of Scouting Craig Button on, and he said that from picks 3 to 11 or 3 to 12, it's completely wide open. Do you agree with that? And could we possibly see a player that some scouts maybe ranked 8th, 9th, or 10th go as high as 3rd or 4th overall?
Absolutely. For those 9 or 10 spots, you could probably come up with about 13 or 14 names of legitimate possibilities of going there. So, you know, what looks like to one team an obvious no-brainer is going to be something completely different when we get to the draft. You know, there's so little separating some of these really skilled guys that it's very, very fine points separating them. And you mentioned Kotkaniemi. You know, if you're looking for a center, what separates Kotkaniemi, Barrett Hayton, Joe Valeno? There's not a lot there. They're all really, really good players, and they have the potential of being really good NHL players. You know, we mentioned the four defensemen. You know, Oliver Wahlstrom is another player we haven't talked about, but he might have the most dynamic wrist shot in the draft. So where do you take him? Could he go as high as 3? Could he go as low as 10 to the Edmonton Oilers? It's going to be very interesting to see where and how this all sorts out, because we appear to be really set at 1 and mostly set at 2, it seems like, assuming Carolina takes Andrei Svechnikov. But after that, to me, the real interesting part of the draft starts at number 3.
Adam, the Jets are in unfamiliar territory without a first-round pick this year, but they do have a second-round pick, 60th overall. What's the need you see the Jets needing to fill, and who are some of the players you would have them select?
Well, I think, you know, finding a couple of young defensemen that they can draft, that they can develop here for the long haul, I think that's really a place they'll look. You know, Dylan Sandberg, last year in the draft, which seems to be a real good find for him, big, strong, skilled kid. I think they need more like that to add into their lineup, because Dustin Byfuglien's 33, Toby Enstrom's not coming back, Tyler Myers is getting up around 30 years old, So you want to, you might not need those guys today, but 3 years from now, it's going to look, those guys are going to be ready to move into your lineup full time, and you want to be able to have that seamless transition. So to me, I think they're really good up front as far as forwards in the prime of their, entering the prime of their career, or guys that are already there. I think if you're going to focus on one position, I mean, look, in the second round, they're going to take the best player available no matter what. But if you've got a forward who, and defenseman rated equal skill-wise, potential-wise, I think they would lean more towards defense.
Adam, do you think that there's any chance that the Ottawa Senators move that fourth overall pick? They do have the option of moving it to Colorado and then hoping that they hit the Jack Hughes jackpot. But do you think they'll keep that pick and take a Philip Zadina or a Brady Tkachuk or another player? Or do you think they're going to consider strongly moving that pick to Colorado?
Well, I think in every interview I've seen with Pierre Dorion going back to the lottery, he said they're 99% sure they're keeping the pick. I think they do keep that pick in the hopes that, look, 2 years ago they were in the Eastern Conference Finals. Last year it didn't work out. So which team are they? So you take your chances and you hope you're the team, you're closer to the team that got you to the Conference Finals last 2 years ago than the team that kind of crashed and burned a little bit this year. Obviously, we all know what's going on. There needs to be some, there are some issues in there that need to be resolved in the locker room. You know, they'll take care of that. But to me, I think that you keep the pick, you take what you can this year, and you just start building again. So I if I'm them, I certainly don't trade. I don't certainly don't give the pick to Colorado. Now, that's not to say a team doesn't come in and offer them the sun and the moon. Then you maybe consider moving that number four pick. But there's a lot of talented players in this draft that look like they can help you. If not this season, then 3 and 4 seasons down the line.
Adam Kimmelman is the deputy managing editor of NHL.com. Adam, last question for you. You know, we've discussed how it's sort of a wide-open draft after the top four, top five. Is there any player in particular that you have your eye on that might fall, you know, into the teens or even into the 20s in the first round that you think might produce, be a quote-unquote steal for a team as when we look back at this draft?
You know, I mentioned a little bit earlier, Keandre Miller from the U.S. national team really might be the most interesting, to me at least, prospect in this year's draft. Here's a young man, he's only been a defenseman for 3 years. So the way he's grown in that time is phenomenal, that we're talking about a defenseman with 3 years of experience being considered a top, not only a first-round pick, but a possible top 15 pick. So you know his ceiling is way higher, but how high quite is it? He's certainly big and strong. He skates well. He's got a developable frame where you can put more muscle on him. I think, to me, you know, somebody's going to – I think if you get him, somebody's going to get him in the middle of that first round. I think they're going to be really happy with him because I think the potential is through the roof for him.
Adam Kimmelman is the deputy managing editor of NHL.com, the NHL draft next Friday and Saturday in Dallas. Adam, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Anytime, guys.
Cheers, Adam.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, we discuss potential buyout candidates as the buyout window opened yesterday. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
And fought for him.
Truth.
Yeah, it is.
Did never put the pressure on him, telling him he needed to back it up after Phaneuf had scored. Yep, there it is. He just reaches out with the blade of his stick, and you just see just the slightest little touch. It changes the direction just a little bit, and it goes right over the right shoulder of Robin Leonard just inside the post.
And from our friends at MSG, Marian Gaborik scoring his first goal as a member of the Ottawa Senators. He was, of course, acquired from the LA Kings in exchange for Dion Phaneuf. Marian Gaborik, right at the top of everybody's list for potential buyout candidates in the NHL. The buyout period opened yesterday. So far, no buyouts have been announced, but Gaborik right at the top of the list. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, two shows, very few tickets available. You know him from Dumb and Dumber. You know him from Half-Baked. You know him from There's Something About Mary. Harland Williams in town tonight at Rumors. Tickets available, RumorsComedyClub.com.
There's Something About Mary was on TV last night.
Wow, did you watch the scene with Harland Williams?
I didn't watch that scene, but I watched a little bit of it.
I see. You were too busy demolishing your extra large pizza?
That was the night before.
Oh, that was two nights ago.
My apologies. Naomi, please come home as quickly as possible, as he may not survive without you.
Yeah. Oh.
Tomorrow's Father's Day there, buddy.
Crushed that pizza during the Bombers game.
Big Father's Day tomorrow.
What else was I supposed to do? There was no game happening.
That's true. So you ate your feelings instead?
I always eat my feelings.
It was the storm. It was the storm.
It was the storm. He was curled up on the couch, comforted by a blanket and that sort of thing.
Yep. So I only brought two CDs back this time.
Why?
Just a couple of really good ones.
Okay.
Justin Timberlake, Justified.
Okay.
I'm definitely going to be taking that one with me. And Sade, Lovers Rock. You like Sade, Drew?
Sure.
Sade's great. Great voice.
Dave?
I got nothing. Okay. That's definitely not my genre.
No, I'm surprised you only brought two. Usually there's more that you can go through and make it a longer segment. I wasn't anticipating that. You'll have to obviously pick up your game for the final segment when we do this again.
Well, I can tell you that we're buying you out.
All righty, let's talk about buyout candidates. Marian Gaborik, I mean, we know that his contract...
What team is he on, Ottawa?
He's on Ottawa. His contract is
Did you honestly
terrible.
Know... Be honest, did you remember that Marian Gaborik was on Ottawa?
Prior to preparing for this segment, no.
He was part of the Dion Phaneuf trade.
That's what I mentioned while you were scavenging for CDs coming back from the break. But, yeah, I didn't remember that Marian Gaborik was on Ottawa because he's Marian Gaborik. He's effectively irrelevant, except for the fact that he still has 3 years and $10.825 million on his contract.
That was a bad contract.
It's a bad contract. Do you think the Senators buy him out?
Probably.
Well, I mean, do they need to buy him out? This isn't a team that can really afford to, spend money on nothing. This isn't really a team that's going anywhere. Why not keep him around?
He has to be cleared first, though.
Medically, you're saying?
Yeah. Well, you can't buy someone out who's injured.
Right. I mean, they would just put him on LTIR and let insurance
handle
it. Well,
and that's the big question, though, Dave, right? Like, what is the long-term health of Marian Gaborik, right? Like, he played, half of the season last year?
Yeah.
And... I mean, how old is he now? 35? 36? How many good productive years does Gaborik have left? Like maybe one, maybe two. I'd be shocked if he has three productive years left in the NHL. So if you're the Ottawa Senators and you don't buy him out this year, I think it's only a matter of time before they buy him out.
There's a lot of talk that they would in fact buy him out next year because they actually can save more money on that contract if they do the buyout next year as opposed to this year.
So this year, I mean, if Gaborik plays 40 or 50 games, you're happy. I mean, I don't think the Ottawa Senators are expecting Gaborik to play 82 games or even 70 games.
I mean, Gaborik is expecting that.
When was the last time Gaborik played a full year? Years ago?
Probably way back to when the Kings won the Cup last. He would have been a contributor to the team then, but it's certainly been...
He had injury problems almost every year as a member of the Kings. You'd probably have to go back to when he was a member of the Rangers.
Yeah, he played 82 games for the Rangers in 2011-12. That's when he had 76 points. That was certainly a tremendous year that he had for the Rangers. Third highest point total in his career that season. But since then, and certainly since he's been a member of the Columbus Blue Jackets and the LA Kings, it's been an injury-riddled career for Marian Gaborik.
Right, and Gaborik is a player that's had a great career. He's played over 1,000 games. I mean, he's up there with not necessarily the greatest goal scorers of all time, but he's got over 400 career NHL goals.
Yeah, he
just hasn't been able to stay healthy. And I just don't think it's realistic if you're the Ottawa Senators to expect him to play a full-time role next year because there's a good chance that he's not going to play more than 40 or 50 games.
Another name bandied about is Jori Lehterä. He is now on the Philadelphia Flyers. He was acquired from the St. Louis Blues.
And it would cost more to buy him out than it would Gaborik.
It would cost more to buy. So his contract, he's making $4.7 million against the cap this season.
Sorry, what did I say? Less to buy him out.
Less to buy him
what
out.
What did I say? More?
You said more.
I meant less.
I know you did.
Less is more, Drew.
Less is more. The Philadelphia Flyers could save more than $3 million in cap space this season if they were to buy out Laterra. He had a horrendous year for the Flyers last season coming over from the St. Louis Blues.
He's just not a very good player.
Not anymore, certainly. He had a stint where he was productive, or at least effective, in St. Louis. But that was a...
I thought he was always underwhelming.
Okay.
As a member of the St. Louis Blues, and I think they always expected more from Jori Laterra. Decent player, but he's a guy, to me, that his game is better suited for the Continental Hockey League.
Well, it would not be a surprise to see him return overseas if he does end up getting bought out by the Philadelphia Flyers. You know, on a one-year deal, though, is it worth buying out a guy who's only got 1 year left on a contract? I mean, unless you really are right up against the salary cap.
Well, I think the question, though, becomes, I mean, he's a center.
Yeah.
He can play wing. But you've got Nolan Patrick there. And we obviously know Sean Couturier is your number one center.
Sure.
So at best, he's going to be your third-line center. But he's not a very good third-line center. Ideally, you probably want him being your fourth-line center. So does he fit into your bottom six, right? So, I mean, there always is the chance that they keep him for that final year. But he's just not very productive at the NHL level.
One guy who signed a big contract in the offseason, last offseason, was Scott Darling with the Carolina Hurricanes. The expectation was...
Well, they're not buying him out. Come on.
You don't think there's a possibility of
a buyout?
He's
got 3 years left on his deal.
And yeah. Cam Ward's a UFA.
Well, so, I mean, but
who's your goalie in Carolina?
Well, can you? I mean, clearly Scott Darling can't be their number one goaltender given the performance that he had this year.
Just to go to the Charlotte Checkers?
Well, I mean, you know,
I can't see Drew. I mean, stranger things have happened. Obviously, look at this week in Ottawa. But Scott Darling, I mean, with 3 years left, yes, I agree. I think at the NHL level, he's better suited to be a backup because he was a backup for those years in Chicago with Corey Crawford being the number one goaltender. So I think the Carolina Hurricanes are probably one of those teams that would like to acquire Philip Grubauer as their number one goaltender, or maybe they sign Carter Hutton, mm-hmm. who's an unrestricted free agent. But I don't know if you buy him out after 1 year.
You save $3.5 million this year. You save $2.8 million the year after.
I could see them trading him before they'd buy him out.
You think somebody's going to be interested in acquiring that contract?
As a backup, maybe.
Well, it's paying a lot of money, $3.5 million, or pardon me, $4.15 million.
The Jets are playing Steve Mason.
As happenstance happens that their backup came in to supersede Steve Mason. That's for 1 year. And there's talk, you know, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, would the Jets be considering buying out Steve Mason as well? You know, we didn't think that that was likely, but it certainly was a possibility. At least I didn't think it was likely. But, I mean, it is.
I don't think it's likely either.
How about Tyler Ennis in Minnesota? He's got 1 year and $3.6 million left on his contract for a team that's very close to the salary cap and needs to re-sign a couple of their pending RFAs. They could get $2.5 million in savings if they were to buy out Tyler Ennis.
You're talking about Tyler Ennis, the hockey player or the basketball player? There's a basketball player named Tyler Ennis.
I know. Do I even need to respond to him, though, Dave? Like, what's the etiquette in this instance?
You know what? I didn't even really understand what was going on with Ennis in Minnesota under Bruce Boudreau, because he was a healthy scratch.
Sure.
He was on the fourth line. I mean, Tyler Ennis is he's a former first round pick of the Buffalo Sabres. They traded Marco Scandella and who else did they trade? Pominville to Buffalo for Tyler Ennis and Marcus Foligno.
Mm-hmm.
And you thought, okay, well, Ennis is either going to be on the second line or third line, not necessarily the top line, but he had an awful year. And I know this because I took him in a hockey pool, and I think he only got something like 20 points. So, and he only played one playoff game in the five games against the Jets. So, I mean, he was buried in Minnesota.
22 points in 73 games. So it's not like he didn't get the opportunity in Minnesota.
Well, this is a guy that he had multiple 20-goal years in Buffalo. Oh. I mean, this is a guy that's got a lot of offensive talent. It's not like he's washed up. He's 28 years old. So maybe they do buy him out. I could also see the Wild trading him, though.
Last name I wanted to mention, Troy Brouwer in Calgary. He's got 2 years and $9 million.
How bad is that Troy Brouwer for TJ Oshie trade looking now?
People forget.
I believe that was a straight-up trade.
That wasn't a Flames trade. That's worth noting that, of course, Brouwer went from Washington to St. Louis, and Oshie went to Washington, and Oshie obviously blossomed in Washington. Brouwer finished his career with the Blues, and then he was signed as an unrestricted free agent in Calgary, a contract that certainly does not look very good right now for
the
Flames.
Drew, just looked it up. Actually, it was Troy Brouwer, goaltender Phoenix Copley, and a third-rounder for TJ Oshie, but for all intents and purposes, yes. It was Oshie for Brouwer.
They were the headliners in that trade, certainly. What about Brouwer? 2 years, $9 million left on his contract. Do you think the Flames could potentially be buying him out? He came off a year where he had 22 points, I believe, in this season in Calgary.
I don't know if the Flames buy him out. I could see Brouwer being a useful player on your fourth line or third line. I mean, he's not going to score 20 goals for you. He's a little bit older now, but I could see the Flames with all of their young players, Matthew Tkachuk, Sam Bennett. Who am I thinking of that came up from the AHL center for the Calgary Flames?
You're on your own here.
I'll look him up. But
my brain's gone blank, unfortunately.
Remember the fans there wanted him coming up from the American Hockey League?
Spencer Fu is... Mark Jankowski?
Yeah, Mark Jankowski, young player. So, you know, Tkachuk, Bennett, Jankowski. I could see them keeping Brouwer around to play on, as I mentioned, either that bottom line or maybe the third line. So I don't necessarily know if you buy him out, but, I mean, he definitely has not, I think, played up to the expectations when they signed him.
Yeah, exactly right. So it'll be interesting. The buyout period opened yesterday. We'll see if there are any buyouts during this period. There's a second period later on in the summer after a lot of contracts are signed and arbitration awards are handed out. So we'll see what happens in that front. When we come back, Kevin Woodley is with In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. Talk about some of the goaltender moves. Talk about goaltender coach Mitch Korn of the Washington Capitals and his path to raising the Stanley Cup. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Kevin Woodley. You know Kevin from In Goal Magazine and his work with NHL.com. Kevin, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Kevin.
Kevin, how was the workout?
Yeah, you might still sucking a little in. This whole spin class stuff that my wife's got me into is evidently it's going to increase my lifespan. There's been a few occasions where I'm worried about it ending while I'm actually doing these things, but we're getting there.
Well, can you go maybe four times as hard so to make up for myself, Ezra, and Dave, and our lack of exercise? That would be great of you there, Kevin.
Yeah, no, I wear a heart rate monitor, and it got up into the one like high 180s, and then afterwards I went and checked what my maximum should be, and it's lower than that. And so, you know, let's just say that I've started scouting out to see if they have defense in the play.
Kevin Woodley, our guest on the program. Kevin, you wrote a great article this week for NHL.com about Washington Capitals director of goaltending Mitch Korn. And Mitch Korn has had a tremendously successful NHL career, 27 NHL seasons, and he finally was able to raise Lord Stanley's Cup when the Capitals won over Vegas earlier this month. Yet the article wasn't so much about that as it was all the players, his quote-unquote children throughout the various leagues who were so happy to see him raise that cup. You know, is Mitch Korn sort of a special character in the NHL? And, you know, what did you learn in that article about what Mitch Korn means to all these different goaltenders?
Well, I think for me it was more about just sharing how much he learned, because I knew it already. Mm-hmm. He is a special person and a special character. He's 27 years in the NHL, as you described, and the only other time he got to a cup final was Buffalo, of course, the infamous, where he was coaching Hasek, but the infamous Brett Hull in the crease goal. 41 years running camps, and that's where, you know, the children of the Korn extend to the NHL, and those are the names that everybody knows. like I said, Hasek, Rinne, now Holtby, but also in the minors. I mean, guys like Mike McKenna, who obviously got to Game 7, was heartbroken for him losing Game 7 of the Calder Cup final this year. He was an original national draft pick. And Mitch, you know, true to form after the celebration, he's already back at his summer goalie camps this week. And this week's stop is St. Louis, where McKenna is from. And if not for the fact he had made a Calder Cup final, Mike could be one of his guest coaches. So the people that he gave to give back to his camps. But it's not just NHL guys. It's he brings in guest coaches who are, you know, coaching like women's high school teams, like whatever level. If you have a passion for goaltending, a passion for the position, you know, there's an opportunity to work with one of, you know, the true legends of the goalie coaching fraternity, come to his camps and learn from him. And he's just been a mentor to so many. And so, you know, catching up with some of those names and trying to share that with the rest of the world to see the impact that he's had on the game and on the position. And even beyond that, you know, talking to some of the guys, not a lot of people realize, but while he was coaching in Buffalo and through the whole 16 years in Nashville, he also was sort of director of arena operations at the University of Miami, Ohio. And so there's a whole crew working evidently through USA Hockey still that were mentored by him on the administration side of things. So still working in hockey, but not even on the ice coaching. He's had an impact there. And so, yeah, just a chance to kind of let the rest of the world know just how much this guy has meant to the game, meant to goaltending in particular, and meant to so many around the world. There were a lot of, I didn't get everyone in there, but there were a lot that were, you know, not scared to admit that watching him finally get to raise that cup and seeing that joy left them in tears, including like professionals like Mike McKenna.
Kevin, sticking with the Washington Capitals, you just mentioned first-time Stanley Cup champions and Philip Grubauer, who started the playoffs as the number one goaltender, but we all know how the story ended. Braden Holtby took over starting with Game 3 in that first-round series against Columbus. I think there's a chance that Philip Grubauer stays with the Washington Capitals, arguably the best backup goaltender in the NHL, because you hear that teams like the Carolina Hurricanes and the New York Islanders would love to have a goaltender like Philip Grubauer on their team.
The only way I see Philip staying in Washington is if teams balk at the price. You know, we're just a few weeks from July 1st, and there will be options you can get without having to, you know, give up an asset in a trade the other way. I mean, Carter Hutton probably tops that list, and you can have him just for the price of a contract. I don't expect Grubauer to be back because he was available last year. I mean, the irony here is they probably don't win the cup without him because his presence allowed them to give Holtby the time in March to sort of reset his game. But he was available all last season. I mean, Philip Grubauer being on the market is not a new thing. You could have had him goaltending last year. And my understanding is the price was high, and that's why some teams balked. But he was available. The Caps went out and got Phoenix Copley because they believed he was capable of backing up a workhorse like Braden Holtby in the NHL last season. And so I imagine that mentality still exists. So they feel comfortable moving forward with that as a tandem. Obviously, Samsonov coming over this year to start in the AHL probably increases that faith. I mean, Grubauer is a guy, honestly, who they, you know, give them truth serum, and they will tell you that they kind of hoped they were going to lose Philip Grubauer instead of Nate Schmidt to the Vegas Golden Knights in the expansion draft last year. So knowing how, not so much eager, but how willing they were to move on him last year, and then you see the year he had, unless the price is ridiculous, to me that's an easy move, and he's gone.
You know, Kevin, this week is the NHL awards in Vegas, and they have two categories for goalies: William Jennings Trophy for least goals allowed by a team netminder, and the Vezina Award, of course, for the top goalie. You guys at In Goal Magazine introduced the Bunny Larocque Trophy last season for the best backup goaltender. Who do you see as the favorite for it this year?
You know what? I'm really curious to see how the voting comes back, guys, and I'm honestly not sure. To us, the backup goaltending position is arguably the toughest in the world because not only do you have to, all the pressure that comes with being a goalie, all the, you know, facing the best shooters in the world in the NHL, but you have no opportunity to establish a rhythm. You're often playing once a week at best, sometimes even longer gaps between starts. You get the second end of back-to-backs when the guys in front of you are often tired. It's not an easy job, and so we wanted to recognize that. the hard part is it's really tough to quantify. So who is more, like, who had a tougher time of it? Curtis McElhinney had a fantastic year in a really tough position. If you read the article, I don't have it in front of me right now, but I think his average days between starts was a little over 11. That's almost 2 weeks between starts. Almost all of his starts were the second half of back-to-back. Like, he was used exclusively in the toughest role. And so do you sort of bump up his stats, which were remarkable, I think 934 save percentage? Do you bump him up because he had a tougher task, or do you look at it like, well, hey, they didn't trust him to start more, and I go with, say, Carter Hutton, who had a 931, played increased minutes, was, I think, closer to 6 days between starts, but also a lot of his starts were consecutively. Like, there were times where he played as a number one, and any goalie will tell you that's a lot easier than having long gaps between starts. Yes, you have to manage your energy, and there is a challenge to becoming a number one in terms of how you manage your time, how you manage your practice, how you make sure you balance between having energy to play and staying on top of your game technically. But when you're doing it in shorter spurts, I don't think it's as much of a challenge. Like, I kind of lean towards a guy like McElhinney because he had all those tough starts. And there's other guys in the voting who are going to say, no, man, he would have played more if they trusted him. Like, if he was so good, they would have played him more than what he did. So I honestly don't have the answer there. We tried to come up with a formula to weight those things, and it just wasn't possible. So what we did is at least showed the voters, and we've got a handful of NHL goalie coaches as part of this panel. Here's what it was. Here's the gaps. You know, I mean, Carter Hutton had times with this amount of games where he played effectively as a number one, whereas McElhinney had all those gaps. And I'm not sure which way it's going to go. My guess is it's probably between those two, as good as Grubauer was, as good as Ryan Miller quietly was in Anaheim. I think both those guys being above a 930 save percentage is probably going to tilt the scale in their favor.
Kevin, on the subject of backup goaltenders, we mentioned Carolina earlier. Cam Ward is a UFA. Scott Darling's got 3 years left on his contract. And now with a new regime there, Don Waddell, Rick Dudley, you've got a new coach in Rod Brind'Amour. The expectation is that the Carolina Hurricanes are going to bring in another goaltender. I guess two-part question. Do you think a team would be interested in signing Cam Ward as their backup goaltender? And do you see Scott Darling better suited in a backup role for the Hurricanes next year?
I still think Scott Darling's perfectly capable of carrying, you know, a more significant role than he did in Chicago. I think he's capable. It's tough to say, hey, he's a number one. I really did believe he had that potential. Obviously, Don Waddell mentioned about him being 15 pounds overweight throughout the season. You know, I haven't talked to him. I don't know what happened there, but that's not ideal. You do have to approach the number one mindset is a different one. You can't come in not in peak shape. There's just no time to build your fitness when you're trying to, like I said, maintain your rest and stay on top of your game technically. I still believe in Scott Darling. I think that would be an ideal situation. We talked about Grubauer as an option there, maybe a Carter Hutton, where, you know, it's more of a 1A, 1B. I don't care who gets what label, but a little more of a job share there so Scott can transition. I mean, he went basically from being a pure backup in Chicago behind Corey Crawford to, boom, hey, you're supposed to be the number one guy. And this is the other part here, and this is where I'm not sure what's going to happen with Cam Ward. I do believe, as much as there are elements of Cam's game that I would have liked to have seen him tighten up technically over the years, I do believe that he is better and has been better than the numbers indicate. I do believe that, especially under Bill Peters, that is a team whose goaltenders were never going to post great save percentage statistics. Yes, the analytics crowd loved them. They dominated the shot clock and the shot attempt clock. As Cam once told me, and other goalies around the league kind of echoed this, they were really good at warming up the other goaltender. Like what we would call in the goaltending world 99 percenters, that's what they threw at the net far too often. And yes, it looked great on the shot clock, but you know, like essentially just those easy saves that allow a goalie to get into a game. And at the other end, they blocked a lot of shots. They didn't give their goalies easy touches. And I've had this conversation with Bill Peters a couple of years ago. He said, well, what do you want me to do, start giving up passes? They didn't give their goalies any easy touches. And then with a young defense that wasn't necessarily stout in front of its own net, when they did give up opportunities, they tended to be high quality. So, you know, I remember watching one game here in Vancouver where they went almost 8 minutes between giving up a shot. Like, their goaltender's basically sitting there trying to stay awake, and all of a sudden, bang, it's a two-on-one or a three-on-two down low with good passing options through the seam. That's tough. That's not every goaltender can do that, not be busy and still be sharp. I mean, the most famous example is, of course, Curtis Joseph, who everybody loved, and then he went to Detroit where the team dominated, and he couldn't find his rhythm behind a team that didn't give up shots. So I thought Darling would have an easier transition to that because Chicago did a little bit of that, but they were better at taking away second opportunities. They're kind of a one-shot team defensively, the Blackhawks, and the Hurricanes in front of their own net weren't that. So, you know, I think both those goalies are better than their stats showed. Obviously, it wasn't a smooth transition for Darling. I do believe when I look at his style and the way he plays it, it's a transition he's still capable of making. So I wouldn't be selling the farm to, I wouldn't be buying him out. I wouldn't be wasting that asset. I wouldn't be going all in to make sure I got another number one goaltender to play ahead of him. I'd be looking more of a partnership. And a guy like Carter Hutt, who is as good off the ice as he has been on the ice, I mean, truly beloved in St. Louis, you know, good as a partner. He'll help Scott Darling get better. That would be where I'd be leading.
Kevin Woodley is with In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. Kevin, appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Perfect. Thanks. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Kevin. When we come back, one final segment, we discuss the tradability of Milan Lucic of the Edmonton Oilers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. One more time, a reminder, next Saturday, 10 a.m. start time, complete coverage of rounds 2 through 7 of the 2017-18 NHL Draft.
I'm pretty sure it's 2018 NHL draft.
I know, I got confused as to what year it was. The Jets, of course, hold the 60th pick in the second round. We'll bring that to you and that selection to you here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show next Saturday morning, right with you until the end of the conclusion of the NHL draft. So it should be a fun show next Saturday here on TSN 1290. Milan Lucic, gentlemen, his name has been bandied about as a candidate to be traded away from the Edmonton Oilers. He's got 5 years left on his contract at $6 million per season, coming off a year where he only registered 34 points. Can the Oilers, is that a tradable contract? Can the Oilers expect to get out from under that contract unless they also sweeten the deal and maybe throw in a draft pick or throw in a player to add more incentive to acquiring Lucic? Or is that an untradeable contract given the season he's coming off of?
I don't think it's an untradeable contract, Drew. The Oilers, if they wanted to trade him, might have to eat some of that salary. Or as you mentioned, they might have to throw in another player. But
yeah.
I might have a different opinion than you guys, but I actually think that the Oilers should keep Milan Lucic. And I realize that he didn't have the best offensive year. But I don't think that the Oilers thought they were acquiring a 30-goal, 60-point guy.
If they did think that, they were fooling themselves.
Well, early on in his career, he had a 30-goal season. But Milan Lucic is more of a 20-goal, 40-point guy, 20-goal, 45-point guy. I think his best offensive years are behind him. Milan Lucic is a power forward. He's a physical player. He can drop the gloves. And I realize a lot has been made out of protecting Connor McDavid, and some people don't think that that really means anything, but I do think it means something. I don't think players take liberties with Connor McDavid when Milan Lucic is on the ice. And I realize that, you know, Milan Lucic isn't on Connor McDavid's line, but the point is he's on the team. Milan Lucic, in my opinion, is not a first-line winger. I mean, ideally, on a good team, he's a third-line winger. But he's a good third-line winger. So I realize that you might be paying him too much, Drew,
sure,
to be a third-line winger. What's he making, $6 million a year?
For the next 5 years, yes.
I really don't have a problem with that. I mean, there's nothing you can do, Dave, about how much money he makes.
Right.
I mean, you signed that contract 2 years ago, right? And he's making $6 million a year. So I don't think that the Oilers have to trade him. And, you know, you look at all of these trades that the Oilers have made, trading Taylor Hall, trading Jordan Eberle. I mean, I think we'd agree those were bad trades for the Oilers. So I think trading Milan Lucic right now, I mean, maybe they trade him 2 or 3 years down the road, but right now I would keep him.
Simply because the return that you're going to get for him is negligible?
Well, I just think that they need him right now on their roster. I mean, this is a young team, Jesse Puljujarvi. I mean, he's going to play a full season with the Oilers next year. Kyler Yamamoto, he's another guy, you know, that's going to factor in for the Oilers. The Oilers have the 10th overall pick coming up. I mean, this is a young team. Obviously, they want to make the playoffs next year, but I think they need Lucic's toughness and they need his experience.
Dave, what would you do if you were Oilers general manager?
Well, what would I do? I'd sign Ezzie to a contract. Sign you, maybe. Then I'd
still
buy. Then I'd buy you out.
That still wouldn't be his worst move.
That's true. No. You know what? Look, there's a lot of. You know, I've read some of the Oilers articles about what they think and how they think that he can perhaps have a rebound season next year if he comes back a little bit faster, and able to keep up with that speed of some of the players on that team. I mean, obviously, it's on Milan Lucic to do the bounce back, so we'll see if he's able to do it because it's a big summer for him.
It'll be an interesting offseason, of course, in Edmonton. That's it for this week's edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to all of our guests, Kevin Woodley, Adam Kimmelman, Mark Dumont, AJ Jakubek, and Kevin Allen. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on our website on tsn1290.ca and wherever you get your podcasts. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Rory doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
As long as we stick together, the team will be all right.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.